back into another wonderful Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We're continuing our coverage of several shows that have been remounted from the New York City Fringe Festival, I should say. And that's all happening at this beautiful place called Playhouse 46, just off Broadway. And today we have a fantastic show to share with you. Truly a brilliant story and one that shouldn't be missed. And joining us to talk about this piece, we have the playwright and director, Tony Patron. He's here to speak to us about The Fountain. And that's playing now through July 14th at Playhouse 46. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting playhouse46.org. We are so excited to be sharing the show with you. It really was so much fun to experience it. We were on the edge of our seats. It's so clever. And I think the better person to explain this to you is not me, but actually our guest. So let's welcome on our guest, Tony. Welcome back to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me back again. It's a pleasure.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so excited to be talking more about your show, The Fountain. This was so amazing. I mean, to get things started, the actress that played the woman of The Fountain, if you will, hats off to her because she's on stage from the word go. Completely still. I mean, that's a difficult role in itself, but this is such a clever show and a clever story. So why don't we start by having you remind our listeners about what The Fountain is about?
Sure. So what The Fountain is about is it's a short story. It's a one act, about 60 minutes, and it's about two companions from different time periods. One's modern day and the other is a 16th century knight from Spain. They become companions in this labyrinth. And while traveling through the labyrinth, they come across this fountain. And while they're stopping to take a rest, they realize that the fountain is, for lack of a better word, alive, quote unquote, and offers them pretty much whatever they'd like, but for a price. Kind of almost a twist on like the monkey's paw.
Yes. I love this tale. It's so good. So what inspired you to pen this? Where'd you come up with the idea?
Sure. So, I for many years, I ran a monthly cabaret in the Upper West Side, and we were always creating new different types of themes and shows, and we're always doing stuff. And, you know, COVID kind of killed that. And as theater was picking back up and we were becoming to be, me and my friends are becoming more creative again. Last year around March, April-ish, we were celebrating my buddy's birthday and we're outside having a joint at the restaurant. He's like, "Hey guys, I've got an idea for you that I've been sitting on." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, what is this?" He goes, "I have an idea for a podcast. It'd be a monthly podcast where we just tell stories. And it's going to be kind of like Twilight Zone, where it's, you know, fantastical and sci-fi, but there's not really necessarily a through line. Some stories can be connected, some stories can be not." And eventually he wanted it to be a thing where, like, after we come out with the first season, which is airing right now, after we go out with the first season and people are like exposed to it, we can start bringing other people that have little short stories that they want to, like, don't know where to put them, they can just pitch it to us and we'll help them record it and pitch it. So that was the initial plan, was writing a couple of podcast episodes. So I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun. So I'm like, yeah, sure, I've not done this. So we all started writing, and like 5 pages turned into 10, turned into 15, turned into 20. And I'm like, we wanted this to be like a 12-minute podcast. I'm like, I have like 20 more pages I got to do. So finally this blossomed into like a 45-page script. I'm like, guys, I think this is actually like a stage thing. And so they read it and they're like, "Oh yeah, we want to do that too." So they kind of adapted their episodes into a staged format. And in June of last year at Playhouse 46, we did a free invite reading of these three shows. We casted some actors and just sat there, scripts in hand, told the people what they're there to see, and just kind of did episode. And mine got a really good reaction. Thankfully, the actors I cast, the actors that you have seen now in Fringe and here at Playhouse 46. And so after I got that reaction from the crowd, I'm like, maybe there's something there. So I submitted it to the Fringe Festival. It got accepted, went through Fringe, and I happen to be on the board of directors of Playhouse 46. So maybe a little nepotism, but we had the open space. And I'm like, you know what? Let's see if we can work with Fringe. You know, Fringe is expanding. This is, you know, I know technically old Fringe is dead because COVID killed it. And this is now the New York City Fringe Festival, but this is new Fringe. And every year they've doubled. I think this year they had 45 people or shows. Last year was like 30 something. And the year before that was 20 something. So I'm like, yo, I want to be a part of this. So I reached out to the head of Fringe and was like, "Hey, we have an opening right now. why don't we work together? Do you think any of your shows would want to continue on and have an off-Broadway credit in their name? And so that's how we got transferred over to Playhouse 46. We offered it out to everybody that was in Fringe, and about 12 shows got back to us. One had to drop out for other reasons, and so now there are 11 shows from New York City Fringe Festival that are now debuting off-Broadway.
That is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, well, one of the big things that the president of our board said in a meeting a couple months ago, which is during one of our monthly meetings, that really resonated with me is, you know, I mean, everybody's show is valid and every theater space is valid, whether you're performing in a 3,000 seat venue or a bar in the basement of a place that seats like 30. Like every place is valid, but a lot of off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway sometimes have to deal with not the best venues just because they're cheap or they're accessible and this is all they can afford. And one of the things that our president really wants to do is he wants to try to make a space that could be affordable and is nice and accessible to off-Broadway and independent artists. I mean, we're right in the middle of Times Square. We're right on Restaurant Row. Like you would have to really fail to like not get to us easily. So like, and I really want to try to continue that spirit. We're gonna hopefully be starting a monthly cabaret series there, and like opening up more for more artists to come in and perform stuff. Like we're really hoping that this year is gonna be a big boost for us within the community.
I love all of that. Yes. And the space is so amazing. So, turning back to your show, The Fountain, what has it been like developing this current iteration of The Fountain?
Sure. So yeah, we had to do a couple of adjustments because, like I said, you know, we're a pretty brand new space, so we're lacking some things on the technical side. We don't, even though we have all the piping and electronics set up for it, we don't actually have a lighting grid in our space. That's kind of what this festival is about. It's to help raise money for getting lights. So we had to deal with lights. We also didn't have at the 14th Street Y their entire backdrop was a projection screen, so it really made our fountain look really large and big, and the backdrop of the labyrinth looked huge. And we're a little bit of a smaller space, so we have a smaller projection, so we had to deal with that. So I had to take everything and size it down a bit. Our fountain is definitely a little bit smaller than it was at the 14th Street Y, but I think it kind of helps. It makes it a little bit more intimate. And I think with this iteration, with the audience being so close to the actors, I mean, the first two rows are on the ground level with the actors, it kind of brings them into it a bit more. And so there was a lot of blocking that I just had to tweak a little bit to be like, hey, let's bring this down a little bit. Let's bring this in a little bit quieter. Let's make this moment a little bit more intimate because we're not shouting to a huge venue. It's a little bit smaller, lower ceilings, a little bit tighter. So that was an interesting thing to tackle, but I almost dare say, even though the 14th Street Y one was probably a more technical achievement looking wise, I think this iteration is the more definitive version.
That is so wonderful to hear. I love that the challenges that you all are overcoming. This is so wonderful to hear. Well, I want to ask you, is there a message or a thought you are hoping people take away from the great story that you're telling in your piece?
Oh boy, I mean, and there's a lot. I mean, for one, anybody that has come and seen it both at Frigid and Off Broadway, I have a on our postcards, I have a little blurb kind of talking about the backstory and just my thoughts on storytelling as a whole. I'm a big fan of storytelling. I mean, my dad, you know, I was watching Star Wars when I was like 3 years old. I've been watching, you know, fantasy movies since I was a kid. I'm an avid reader. Two of my favorite authors are Stephen King and Douglas Adams. So I'm a big proponent of storytelling just as a medium in all its forms, podcast, film, just sitting around a campfire. Like I just discovered a couple years ago that the Electric Something play, it's a story about the Mr. Burns play, and it's about this society that is, you know, it's post-apocalyptic, and they're telling a story about this one episode of The Simpsons, and it keeps flashing forward like hundreds and thousands of years, and like this Simpsons story has now become like a religion and people dress up, and like the power of storytelling is such an awesome thing. So that's the big message I want everybody to take away from is just telling stories is just such a cool thing. And however you want to tell it, whether it's a one-man show, an audio, a live performance piece, storytelling is awesome. To get a little bit deeper into it, I do come from a religious background. I was born and raised Roman Catholic. I had my communion. I've been confirmed. My confirmation name is Michael, because when it came down to it, it was either Michael the Archangel or George who slayed the dragon. And as like a little 13-year-old, I'm like, fuck, which one's cooler? So I grew up in religion, but I fell out of it really hard around 13 to get into a trigger warning. There is a unaliving story here. Feel free to use this if you need to. But when I was in CCD, and I was around 12 years old, we had two CCD classes, and we would always meet together at the middle of the day for like lunch and snacks, just socialize. And one of the kids that was in another class, I didn't know him very well, after he had served, his treats, he asked one of the nuns, could he go excuse himself to the restroom? And he left, walked across the parking lot to the chapel, took out a gun, and shot himself in the head. Didn't leave a note behind, nothing. So obviously we were all sent home for the week. When we came back the next week, it wasn't like a regular CCD class. We spent the entire time in the chapel, which I thought was like they had another church just on the other side of the building. Why they brought us to that chapel really fucked with me, but that's besides the point. And we spent our entire CCD class there. And there was prayers and there was talking. Kids were mostly silent. And at one point, I remember one of the priests asking if anybody had any questions. And I raised my hand. I said, why did God allow this to happen? And they paused, they hesitated, and then went into the whole, God works in mysterious ways and yada yada bullshit. But it was that moment. It's like, nope, bullshit. This is all bullshit. This is all fucking wrong. And I've had a real problem with religion since then. I don't have a problem with people who are religious or spiritual. Believe what you want to believe. If it gets you through the day, your God bless you. I have no problem with it. But when people start using it as excuses to do things, as the one character Diego says in the play, I have seen and performed numerous decrepit acts in his holy name. There have been many people that have done things and used religion as a backdrop to say, no, this is okay. And I fucking hate it. So that's another thing that I kind of like to bring up with this show is my open contempt with organized religion. As a side note, one of the characters in the play, William, the actor's parents are actually very religious, and when they came and saw the show at Fringe, they burst into tears. They were crying. It really made them question some things. And that's another goal that I do want people to take away from, is just to talk about it and digest it. And there are many different interpretations as to what is the Lady of the Fountain. Is it a representation of God, or the Metatron, the voice of God, or is it a other ambiguous omnipotent being? It's that's kind of up to the interpreter, I guess. Sorry, that was a long diatribe, but there's some of the messaging behind what went into this story.
That is incredible, though. That story, my heart goes out. I totally have been there. So what an amazing thought, an idea to come out of that to channel into this work. So that is fabulous. My final question for this first part is, who are you hoping to have access to the fountain?
I mean, I think everybody, but I mean, it probably shouldn't be for anyone below like 12 or 13. I guess like a PG-13 rating if I had to throw a movie on it, like a movie rating on it. I don't know if I'm the best one to say that. I saw The Exorcist when I was 8, so again, that's a little bit of me. But yeah, I think anybody. I mean, there's good messaging in there, regardless of the religious backing, and there is still good messaging in there. And also the stories being told, the metaphors being told are, metaphors and stories that have been told over and over and over again since the dawn of time. I mean, I reference again that, the wish giving and granting is very reminiscent of the monkey's paw. The Lady of the Fountain retells the story of Edgar Allan Poe's the Mask of the Red Death, and faith and folly. There's the telling of honesty with Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. There's all sorts of different tales that just I think anybody can have access, because we all love stories. I mean, as children, we're put to sleep with stories. Like we're grown up listening to stories, and now we listen to podcasts when we go to sleep or we're on the road. Like we like hearing people talk to us. So I think this is accessible for everybody.
On the second part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pick your brains, if you will. And I want to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past or are just some of your favorites?
Oh, wow. Okay. We're gonna run a gamut of things. So in terms of writing, I've already mentioned Douglas Adams and Stephen King in terms of novels. And I would say more recently, a novelist who's kind of a mashup of the both of them. He used to go by the pseudonym David Wong, but now he goes by Jason Pargan. He wrote the John Dies at the End series and another series that begins with a book called Futuristic Violence in Fancy Suits. Really, really good writing. It's, you know, sci-fi, horror, dark comedy. In terms of things like musicals, I mean, I Little Shop of Horrors is forever my number one musical of all time. I loved the movie. It was the first show I ever saw on Broadway with Joey Fatone as Seymour. It's just, I think it's one of the best music. I mean, you want to talk about musicals that you can't remember music to, I dare you to have somebody sit through that and not sing four of the songs on the way home. Like, that's just one of the best musicals in the world. More recent stuff, I mean, I think I've seen Hadestown 4 times on Broadway. I absolutely think, like, when the subject of storytelling, I knew Hadestown was like a story, telling it of an old story, and I knew that it was, you know, kind of like jazzy folk music, but I didn't know what story they were telling. And as the show was going on, I realized what story they're telling. I was like, oh no, this is gonna end bad. Like, as it dawned on me, I was like, fuck. And then I just cried every single time. So yeah, I would definitely say Hadestown. In terms of like movies and television shows, I know he gets a lot of hate for The Last Jedi, but Rian Johnson is one of my favorite writer directors. Even before he started getting hot for The Glass Onion and Knives Out people, when people are like, oh, these are the greatest things ever. I'm like, bitch, I've been with him since Brick. Okay, Brick is one of my favorite movies of all time. A young Joseph Gordon-Levitt, it's a movie that takes place in a modern-day high school. I think it was around like mid-2000s. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character's ex-girlfriend, turns up dead, and it's a murder mystery, and he sets out to figure out who killed her and why. But what's cool about the movie is all the cinematography and all the dialogue is of like a 1920s Humphrey Bogart film noir. At one point, he's interviewing the guy who was last dating her, and he punches him, and all his pothead friends are there smoking pot behind a building, and they get up, and he turns and he goes, swing if you want to, hashtags, I got all 5 senses, and I slept last night, which puts me 6 up on the Latia. And I'm like, oh my God, fucking dialogue. Like, just so fucking fire. So I've been a Rian Johnson man, Brothers Bloom, Looper. Like, I think that man crafts wonderful stories and has such a way with dialogue. So I those are definitely all inspos into my little wild and crazy world.
I love that list. That is amazing. Well, kind of snowballing off of that, have you seen any great theater lately you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
The last really good piece that I could say that I saw, unfortunately, it's not closed. It was a short one. It was a really cool piece actually by one of the guys that was part of Fringe. It was a show called Third Law, and it was a 6-person piece. They had, I think, 3 female-facing actors and I think 3 male-facing actors, and it was kind of a interpretive storytelling of like Adam and Eve in the garden and the creation of man. But it was very interactive. You were brought in small groups of, like, I think my group was like maybe 12 to 15. And they don't tell you anything. They do not explain anything. It is up to you to figure it out. And thankfully, me and one of my producing partners, we got into it really quickly. And afterwards, I talked to them. I was like, do you guys care that like we kind of ran control? Because as soon as I figured out what the thing was and like what the circles were and what triggered what, I was hopping from circle to circle because I wanted to see all these different, one thing changed the sound, one thing changed the light, one would swap out actors. And so I was just bouncing around. They're like, oh no, this was incredible. We never had to deal with that before. Like, this was awesome. So that's a really cool piece that I saw. Unfortunately, it's not around. Of things that I have seen recently, I will bring up, you know, self-promotion, the Fringe stuff that's playing this weekend. There's a lot of great shows that are still playing that I saw. Solitary is a great 30-minute piece written by a gentleman that's starring a lovely lady that takes place inside of solitary confinement. And the background ambient track was recorded live from a solitary wing in Maine. And it's a little disturbing. It's you know, there's nothing overtly disturbing. Like, there's no like swearing or like gruesome sounds, but just the constant onslaught of noise and screeching and just never having a moment of quiet, even though you are locked away by yourself. It's really, for a 30-minute piece, it's really jaw-dropping. I can't speak enough about it. A Date with My Wild Again is a fantastic one-woman piece. Oh, catch it for our actor friends that listen, since most shows are dark on Monday. Miss Rachel Redleaf will be doing her show on Mondays, Too Much of a Good Thing. It's a one-woman show about her self-breast discovery, and she's actually going to be bringing that show to Edinburgh Fringe this year.
That's amazing! That's some wonderful suggestions in there, including Bird Law. From What Will the Neighbors Say? It was a creator's pick here at Stage.
So cool. It was so cool. I'm glad you got to see it. It was wild. I sent all my friends to go see it.
Let me ask you now, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
You know, it's the first time I wrote something that was completely mine that I had performed. Because I had done cabarets where it was like other people's works. I'll dabble in my own little jokes here and there, and you know, whatever. People are laughing mostly because they're coming to see, like, when I would perform The Nightman Cometh on stage. Like, they were coming to see that, not my little stupid jokes. So the first time that I wrote something fully and people reacted to it and they cried and they laughed, and I'm like, ooh, it was like a drug. I was like, oh yeah, give me this. I mean, I was a performer at a young age. I got into theater, I guess, technically late. I was High School the Musical was technically about me. I was a state wrestler all throughout high school. And then my senior year, I quit all sports because my knees were getting jacked up. I'm like, I'm just going to go do theater now. And so I quit sports. I was captain of the wrestling team, and I quit to be Mercutio and Romeo and Juliet and Joseph my senior year of high school. So, like, I loved doing theater because it's just fun. And hey, to all of our young listeners, you know what? They always used to say jocks get all the girls. No, theater kids get all the girls. Theater kids get, or guys, or both. Theater kids get all the people. Man, the first time I went to an after party, whoo, that's for a different podcast. But yeah, just theater, you can do so much cool stuff. I mean, you know, from even something as, you know, God bless them, Godzilla, or King Kong the Musical wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but that animatronic puppet and the graphics that they did, wow, the fact that you can do something like that in live theater, but also do something in like a 10-person black box and still get the same type of emotional reaction. Like, I don't think there's anything like that. Film and TV is awesome and they have their place, but to get it live and raw like that, there's no other feeling. There's no other feeling like it.
I love that answer. That is a brilliant answer. And I think many of our cohorts in the arts completely relate to that. And that leads to my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Oh, wow. Okay, this is one of my favorite stories to tell. We're doing Grease in high school. It was my junior year. And this was mid-2000s, I think it was. And like most schools, you know, the arts system is one of the first things that gets cut in budget cuts, arts and music. And there was a threat to cut the arts program. Our plays and musicals were not really bringing a lot of people. So we went for broke and said, we're going to do a show that's going to bring people. We're going to do Grease. And thankfully, we sold out every night. Like, we oversold. We had students just sitting on the floors. And we ended up, you know, after every performance, we would bring out a petition and say, hey, there's a vote on this petition. You know, please sign it so that we get funding. And we did. We saved the theater for our school. But that's not even the story I want to tell. We're doing Grease. And if you're familiar with the theatrical version, not the movie version, the T-Birds, there's a scene where they're getting ready to fight the Flaming Dukes. And all of us are lined up and we all got our weapons. And I was playing Duty and I had a lead pipe. And my buddy was playing Kernicky and he had a bat. and we were waiting for the character of Rump to come on, and he's supposed to come on with a car antenna. Our car antenna was just a hanger folded in half that we had set aside. So we're sitting on stage and we're giving the lines and we're waiting for him to come on, and he's not coming on. And I can hear off stage just things being thrown because he cannot find this. So we're ramping. And finally, I just hear a noise and I hear just scraping along the ground. And we turn and look, and out walks Rump, and he's dragging behind him a 6.5 foot tall metal coat rack that used to hang our costumes that he just threw all the costumes for, and he's dragging it like a Neanderthal club behind him. And so we all turn and look at him, and Sonny's next line is supposed to be, "Hey, look who showed up. Where'd you been, Meatball?" He was so in shock, he just looks at him and goes, "Meatball." So we're all on stage trying our hardest not to laugh. Rump's next line is supposed to be, "Oh, hey guys, sorry I'm late. I couldn't find my bullwhip, so I had to bust off an aerial," talking about the car antenna. Well, he doesn't have a car antenna. So he goes, "Hey guys, sorry I'm late. I couldn't find my bullwhip, so I had to swipe this from my grandma's house." So all the T-Birds are now laughing on the floor. And the audience is laughing too, but they don't really know that this is not the lines. And then the piece of resistance, my buddy Kanicki takes the bat and he walks over him. And again, Rump is supposed to have a car antenna, and Kernicki's line is like, "What are you going to do with that thing, huh? How about you hit me over the head with that? I hit you over the head with this. Let's see which one hurts more." So he goes to him and goes, "Yeah, what are you going to do with that? How about I hit you over the head with this thing? You hit me over the head with that. Let's see which one hurts more." Probably that thing. At that moment, all of us are just on the floor laughing. It was just absolutely insane, and the audience was cracking up. Everybody on stage was cracking up. It was just one of my favorite. I was like 16 years old. I'm like, "Oh, this is what theater's about. This is great." That's one of my favorite theater memories.
Oh my god, that is amazing. I absolutely love that. There's got to be a video of that somewhere out there. I just want to see that.
I'm sure my mom or dad have a VHS tape somewhere buried in our basement. I hope someone has it because, oh God, I would love to watch that again.
I love that memory. Thank you so much for sharing that. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, a couple things. For one, my company, Patronize Productions, we also produce 3 podcasts that are currently running. One is a podcast between a husband and wife duo called In Good Spirits, where they just talk about supernatural stuff. And what they're trying to do for this first season is do a ghost story for all 50 states. Another one is a show called Villainology, in which my friend Rob interviews a person about who their favorite villain is, whether it is a real life person or a fictional villain. And we've got people on there such as like the Joker and Jean Valjean. We have all sorts of great actors on there. He actually has an interview with Alex Brightman. So that's a great one. And then we also have our narrative podcast, Tales from the Labyrinth, of which The Fountain is part of that story fabric. And our podcast version of that one should be out in a couple of months. In terms of play stuff, we are working on a play and a musical right now. The play is an adaptation of a now out of print Stephen King book called Rage, which was, it's written about a high school kid who holds his math classroom at gunpoint and has a conversation with them about what it's like being a kid. How do we treat each other as peers? How do parents treat us? It's a very powerful story in my telling. He wrote it first when he was 16 years old, and then published it under the name of Richard Bachman when he was starting to get popular, because he was like, "Am I like a really good writer, or are people buying it because I'm Stephen King?" And it turned out to be both. And he published it as under Richard Bachman, and it has now been out of print because there were, I think, 8 or 9 school shootings in the U.S. that referenced the story in some way. Either they had like written an essay on it or they quoted it. So he pulled it off the shelves and you can't find it anymore. I have a copy of it because I have an old copy of the Bachman books. And so I'm doing an adaptation of that, and I'm hoping to pitch it to his team, because King is very famous for working with up-and-coming artists and producers, and he has a portion of his website called Dollar Babies, where he has everything listed that he's ever written that is not in some form of production. And if you pitch it to him and his team and they like it, he'll sell you the rights for $1. So I'm going to try to pitch this to him. Then a musical that I'm currently working on, I've been working on for the past 6 years. I'm working on a jukebox musical using the music of a band called Jukebox the Ghost, and it's called Safe Travels, and it's very silly rom-com boy meets girl and boy meets boy story that takes place in an airport where there's a really bad thunderstorm, so all the planes are grounded and nobody can go anywhere, and it's a little love story that takes place in an airport, and it's super, super cute.
Wow, that all sounds amazing. Amazing. You've got quite a few irons in the fire right now that we
I gotta keep them cooking. Gotta keep them cooking.
So that's a great lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about The Fountain or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Sure. You can find us on our website, which is patronize.com. That's PATRYN as in Nancy, IZE.com. Or you can follow our Instagram at Patronize Productions. We always post things there. We have links to the tickets to see the show. You know, use code LIGHTSON for $10 off your ticket. And that works for all the shows at Fringe. So even if you're not coming to see mine or don't only want to see just mine, you can use that code for all the shows at Fringe.
Well, wonderful. Well, Tony, this has been an absolute blast. I've had so much fun, and I really appreciate you coming back on and delving more into your great piece, The Fountain. It really was just such a great time. I can't wait to see it again. I'm so excited about all you're doing with Playhouse 46 and all that's happening, especially around your show. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us. You know, this has been awesome.
My guest today has been the amazing playwright and director, Tony Patron, who joined us today to talk about his work, The Fountain, which is playing now through July 14th at Playhouse 46. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting playhouse46.org. We also have some contact information for our guest, which will be posted on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. And also, you can use the promo code LIGHTSON for $10 off tickets for The Fountain or any of the shows that are part of the Turn the Lights On Festival happening at Playhouse 46. And be sure to come out and support them, because this is a great fundraiser for this theater. Help out a wonderful organization. How about a great theater? And you get some great shows when you go as well, especially this one. This amazing show is playing now through July 14th, and again, the title is The Fountain. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.